Sunday night edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. I'm sad to inform you that I actually lied to you on Thursday night because we are not going to do 15 and 60 tonight. My internet on the plane flight back from Toronto was not as spry as I hoped it would be. So we're going to do something else that actually we need to get started on, and that is previewing the trade deadline for all of these divisions. We're going to do the Pacific Division today. Also got some news to get to. And time permitting, we'll talk a little bit about the Denver-Minnesota game as well, which was really a great game until the very end. Also some Mike Malone channeling the ghost of Keith Smart. But more on that in a little bit. We are sponsored today by Policy Genius. If you don't have life insurance, go to policygenius.com today to save over 70% off other prices for life insurance. And our good friends at Blue Apron, blueapron.com/capspace, will get you your first three meals free with free shipping. Danny, very nice to be back in the West Coast. How are you doing?
Doing well. Enjoyed a couple of interesting games today. It was also weird with the 9 a.m. Pacific start for the Warriors, but lots going on. Do you want to start with the Carmelo stuff?
Yeah, Carmelo Anthony said that he would consider waiving his no trade clause if the Knicks were going to consider rebuilding. Now, that's what the Knicks should be doing. They should be having those conversations with him. But it seems unlikely, as we've talked about before, that there's really anywhere for him to go that he would want to go that's going to make that team a championship contender, and therefore that team would give up enough assets to make it worth the Knicks' while.
Especially considering the amount of money that the Knicks spent this summer. Like, if they had structured things a little bit differently, just moving his salary would make a bigger difference. And I could see an argument just because of the space he occupies in their offense that you can make the argument, oh, well, you know, it'd be better to unload him. It is different now than it would have been if they had been more judicious with their space. That said, I think this has some significance just because it is the first time that we have heard any sort of an indication that he would be willing to waive it at all. And when you go from a hard no to something less than that, it matters.
This is not the Atlantic Division trade deadline podcast, so we don't have to get too far into that right now. But another thing that's pretty amusing, the trade that we called the most boring in NBA history has actually gotten slightly interesting, at least for us.
It was fantastic because what happened was the Nuggets traded for Mo Williams from the Hawks and got a little bit of savings. We're paid to do so,
and they saved money, and the Hawks saved money. It was a win-win.
A win-win. So they waived Mo Williams as a part of the standard procedure with that, and he gets claimed by the 76ers, who have exactly the same motivations as the Nuggets do.
Yeah, and then that meant that the Nuggets did not get close to the salary floor and therefore lost the savings, because then they would be on pace again to have to pay their players instead of paying half of Mo Williams' salary. They have to pay the entire difference between themselves and the salary floor. So there was some talk that Denver could just claim Williams right back because Philly waived him to sign Jason Randall, who has actually been okay for them, former Knicks, Westchester Knicks D-leaguer. But it looks like they didn't do that. I think their deadline was 5 o'clock today, and we haven't heard a report of that. So good job, Philly. A Hinkie-like move by Brian Colangelo.
It is also a reminder of how different the market is this year in terms of luxury tax teams, because in other years, teams, the few that would have this kind of space, and there are more this year that are kind of in that area, would be saving it and just trying to extort whatever they can. But because the cap spiked so quickly, there are not that many teams in the tax in the first place, and there are even fewer of them that are scrambling to get below it to lower their bill, like let's say Miami was last year.
In Detroit, the always quotable Stan Van Gundy had a good one. I'll just read this quote. Everybody's available. I got asked a question the other day. There's a report out there that Reggie's available for the right price. Everyone in the league is available for the right price. It's just for your main guys, the right price is a lot steeper and usually doesn't come around. This stuff is crazy. I'm not going to be the guy to step up and say none of these guys is available, because I'm not lying to anybody. So that's really just classic Van Gundy. And he's right, of course. Like, pretty much everybody is available for the right price. Unless you're just, you know, Manu Ginobili or something on the Spurs, like just or Dirk or something, like just a total legend.
Is LeBron the least likely guy to be traded in the league?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, the combination of importance to the city and irreplaceability.
I think that's right. So out of the Lakers, not the greatest news. An MRI for D'Angelo Russell confirmed he has a mild MCL sprain, also a calf strain and a bone bone bruise, but only to miss 1 to 2 weeks. Russell actually had really been struggling. It had been a topic of some consternation in Lakerland, but it looks like this was an acute thing. I don't think it was something that he was struggling with for a while, but he will probably need some time here, and maybe it'll last long enough now since we're in late January. Maybe they'll just hold it off all the way to the All-Star break, because, of course, as we will get to, they have plenty of incentive to do so.
Yes, they do. We'll save the pick protection for later, but know that it is coming.
We may see some D-League expansion as well, which I think is something that everyone wants as we move towards a 1-to-1 affiliate ratio here.
Scott Howard Cooper had a piece that came out with some of his takeaways from the D-League showcase, which was in Mississauga over the weekend, as Nate knows. And they're going to add
it. I had it wrong. It's actually Mississauga.
Mississauga?
I think I was messing it up because I wanted it to be close to Mississippi, but it's not.
Yeah.
So sorry. That happens. Sorry.
I've read it far more than I've ever heard it. So that makes sense.
So all of you listeners in the GTA, I am sorry for butchering the pronunciation of Mississauga, but hopefully I'm getting it right now.
So the D-League will add at least 2 new teams for next season, and they'll announce it before or during the All-Star break, which is exciting, and possibly a third, and that third team would make 25. So getting pretty close to the 30 that they want.
Yeah, and sadly, he also said that Santa Cruz will not be the host anymore because they don't have 2 gyms, which is too bad because Santa Cruz is an hour away from where we live, and now I have to go on a 6-hour flight. Although I do have to say, the few times I was able to actually get into Toronto, I was extremely impressed by the food scene there. But we'll leave those podcasts to Kevin Arnovitz. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and more Detroit news. Practice on Sunday. We saw him get hurt in person about a week and a half ago against the Warriors. We feared that it could be a bad injury. We'll see how he's able to play with this, but encouraging that he's able to go through practice and hopefully play. And for his sake, especially with him about to be a free agent, I hope that this will be the end that we hear of this, although I still will be keeping an eye on it. What else we got?
JJ Barea is out until the All-Star break with a calf injury. Today, they started Deron Williams and Seth Curry together in their stomping of the Lakers, and it'll be an opportunity to see what they have and stuff.
Yeah, this is probably more good news, though, for Dallas in terms of just making their pick a little better. Although since that terrible start, they were like 3-14 or something. They've actually been totally respectable with Dirk back, and they had just a horrible rash of injuries during that time period where basically like Wes Matthews and Harrison Barnes were like the only healthy guys they had among their main rotation players. But now that guys like D-Will are back, they're looking a little bit better. And then Andrew Bogut as well could return this week from a hamstring injury. His season, as so many of his are, has been short-circuited by injury, and this will give him a chance to showcase a little bit. But certainly the prediction that he could net a first round pick in trade looking less and less likely by the day.
The showcase is probably in some ways more important for Dallas than for him, because if he were bought out, he would have more choice in the matter than if he were traded for a pick. But either way,
yeah, it'll be interesting as we go through here to think about who could actually use him in terms of like of an actual trade. And I'm not really sure who precisely that would be. All right, we'll be back momentarily. We'll get to this Pacific Division trade deadline preview. But first, this from Policy Genius. I know we have a lot of younger listeners, people who are maybe just starting their careers or getting close to starting a family. And in that case, life insurance, you may not have thought about it yet, but it's something that really everyone needs. I think a lot of people can find it to be a hassle or too expensive, but Policy Genius is here to make the process a little bit easier. They will give you the best prices on the best policy with the best service. At policygenius.com, you can get the most accurate quotes from the top A-rated life insurance companies, and they've placed over $5 billion in life insurance for people like you. One of the big selling points for a topic that can be relatively confusing is a very simple user-friendly website to shop and compare all the top-rated life insurance companies and to give you the best options. And their fully licensed customer service team can help you find the best policy at the best price. So if you want to check them out, go to policygenius.com today to save over 70% over other prices for life insurance. Like many disruptors in other industries, they pull various quotes together and get life insurers competing for your business to save you money. That's Policy Genius, PolicyGenius.com. Zero jargon, zero sales pressure, zero hassle. Go to policygenius.com today. And while you're there, you can also check out their health insurance offerings if you need to get health insurance before January 31st to avoid a tax penalty. All right, let's start. We'll go in alphabetical order here with the Golden State Warriors. And clearly this is a team competing for a championship. They're not going to be interested in players who aren't going to be able to play for them. What do you see just as the needs for this team on the floor? If you just had carte blanche to acquire something, what would you be targeting at the moment? Something, you know, obviously we know they need another wing just to play mop up garbage time, but I think that's more something they would look to the D-League for. But just in terms of where this team might be weak, that now has the best point differential of all time through this many games.
It would be great to have another possible center, just somebody who's capable of potentially playing spot minutes on this team in the playoffs, like not playing spot minutes in garbage time. They have seven guys who can do that. But to get somebody who can fill that role would be great. Other than that, I think their playoff rotation is close to set unless they got a high upside guy basically anywhere else, because they can fit somebody in. They have enough flexibility in their best players, but they could do better in terms of just regular season depth, adding somebody who can play some garbage point guard minutes and all that. But we don't need to focus on that because this team is going for a title.
Yeah, I think that, and really, when you look at what a normal playoff rotation would be, they don't really need that much. Assuming David West is back, they don't really even need another center. They can just take JaVale McGee or McAdoo or Varejao or whoever they're playing, or Looney, out and roll with Pachulia and West, and then play Draymond Green at center some as well. They have two good wings off the bench with Livingston and Iguodala. Livingston can also play backup point guard. That eight-man rotation really would probably be enough for most teams, and maybe Ian Clark will get a few minutes. I don't know that there's anybody out there really who would be an upgrade. And the other problem too is that they just don't have a ton of ammunition to go and get something, especially because I think they desperately, with their future, with Kevin Durant potentially needing to be re-signed to the max, losing some depth, any future picks are going to be prized just as a potential source of cheap labor that they're desperately going to need in the years to come.
They also have that uncertainty of exactly what they're going to need in terms of cap space. So I've had people at various moments advocate for certain players, so they could get X guy who's under contract for next year. And if you need to use cap space to sign Kevin Durant, those players become albatrosses really quickly. So I wouldn't expect that. Also, the Warriors are very low in assets, not only in terms of present personnel, unless they wanted to move Looney or McCaw, but also because they don't have their first or second round pick this year and do not have a second round pick until 2020.
How much do you believe it in Looney and McCaw right now? Like, is it possible that just because they're on the Warriors, they could just... maybe their value is the highest it's ever going to be right now? Is that possible, that maybe it would just make sense to move them because their value could only go down if they just aren't that good?
They should listen, for sure, because there are that championship benefit. And while the Warriors haven't won a championship with either one of those players, they do get the shine of being on the Warriors, and both have looked good in moments of time. So if another team is irresponsible, you go for it. But I can't really imagine that at this point, because neither one of them has been great during the regular season.
Also complicating their efforts, if they wanted to cobble together some salary, Damian Jones is another guy who'd be in it. You would normally say, hey, maybe we could just get a guy who's making like $3 or $4 million. We could put together a package with Matt McAdoo and Varejao and Ian Clark. Those guys are making the minimum. All three of those guys have effective no trade clauses because they would lose bird rights if they were traded. Not that the organization would have any interest, hopefully, in re-signing McAdoo and Varejao, but nonetheless, both McAdoo in his third year with the team, each on he was on a two-year deal, and then this a one-year deal. So if he gets traded, he loses his bird rights. Varejao would lose his early bird rights if you're traded, since he's on his second year with the team on a one-year deal. So those guys could veto a trade if they wanted to. But yeah, I mean, Jones, Looney, McCaw, those are really the only players that they could potentially move on from at this point. And I don't necessarily see them doing that. And I'm not sure who is out there at that price that they would want to get, because as you said, they really cannot take on money for next year. And to refresh your memory of why that is, Kevin Durant, the most that they could pay him using his cap hold and staying over the cap is $31.8 million. His max is going to be slightly over $36 million. And with that being the case, they would need to clear out $36 million in cap room to sign him to a four-year deal starting at his max if that's what he wanted. To do that, not only would they not be able to take on any extra salary, but they would also have to dump the cap holds of Andre Iguodala, his cap holds $16.7 million, and Sean Livingston, who has an $11 million cap hold, to even get under the cap to get that $36 million to sign KD. And once they sign KD, they would have about $6 million left, really not, you know, less than the mid-level exception, really, to do anything with. And then they would have their room exception as well. That's the other problem, too, is they get under the cap, and then they can't use their full mid-level exception. The other thing, too, is that Steph Curry is going to, his cap hold is only $18 million, but then when he signs his designated player veteran extension, his salary will go up to $36 million. So you're basically zooming up almost to the tax just with him. Hopefully, they're willing to just pay the tax, but this is not an organization that they'll pay the tax, but they probably don't want to be totally indiscriminate about it. So that's why they can't take on any more money for next year, because now you're potentially imperiling your ability to pay KD the absolute max. And if that's what he wants, they're obviously going to do that for him.
Exactly. And I've every once in a while somebody talked about, oh, they could trade Livingston, they could trade Iguodala. And there are certainly, you could pose a crazy hypothetical where one of those players would be traded during the season. But realistically, I don't see an offer that comes across the desk that is worth giving up those guys, considering their essential roles on this team and they're part of the fabric of this team.
Yeah, if you look at some of the players they could plausibly acquire who are going to be free agents on teams that are kind of out of it. Again, I guess I can't think of anyone really who would be a huge upgrade on Pachulia or David West that they would trade for. And then you also have the problem that they really wouldn't be able to match salary unless they were to move Looney and Jones and maybe JaVale McGee. You know, you could probably take back $5 million, but now you're giving up on those guys who, again, is it worth giving up on those guys' future to get someone who may not even be an upgrade over the guys that you already have? Now, if they had some kind of an injury between now and the trade deadline, you know, if West, he has a thumb injury, but he's supposed to be back in a couple of weeks, that non-displaced fracture of his left thumb. If he were to go out or Pachulia were to get injured or something, and then they're like, all right, we have a situation here where this lack of experience could just kill our championship, then maybe they start to think differently about it. But I just don't see them feeling like they need to make a move.
And this combination of factors is why they're a much bigger part of the buyout market than the trade market.
Yeah, that's the case too. I mean, you know, who would you be looking? You'd be looking at like Mike Scott, maybe, from the Hawks, who's not even playing for the Hawks right now. Or yeah, I mean, that's really about it. Most of these big men free agents are on pretty good teams already. So, you know, Taj Gibson from the Bulls, they probably don't have the assets to go and get him. It would be pretty hard to match the salary for him. He's making $8 million. So you'd have to cobble together two-thirds of that. That would be difficult to do. And again, just having him, he's better than David West, but is he that much better that you want to give up on potential sources of cheap labor going forward? I don't really think so.
Ready to move on to the Clippers?
Let's do it. Yeah. And why don't you take it away here as far as just what they might be trying to do, where they'd be trying to upgrade at this point in a perfect world?
The way that I conceive of the Clippers is, so there are really two paths, and I only expect one of these paths to be relevant, which is the full strength. What do they need if they're there? So then you're not talking about a replacement for Blake Griffin or anything like that, because it's pretty abundantly clear at this point that at less than full strength, they're not that dangerous, they're not that interesting. So then you're thinking, okay, so who fits in where? What do you fit in with that? And Luke Richard and Bob Mute, it to me, has done a good enough job to make it so that getting a starting caliber small forward is not as urgent as need as I genuinely expected it to be. And Spates has done a solid enough job at backup center that while I would love to have a more capable rim protector, it's not urgent. And both of those are important because, like the Warriors, and arguably even more strongly than the Warriors, the Clippers are devoid of assets. The Clippers do not have any second round 2017 picks unless they miss the playoffs. They can't trade a first until 2022 unless they kind of go inside pick protection on trades that already exist. And they can't trade a second until 2019. They also have no cap space. They have a $1.2 million trade exception, which is not very much, and they're hard capped at the apron. And what hard cap means is that you cannot go over that for any purpose. It's $4 million above the luxury tax line, and I have the margin as being $2.5 million right now between where their current salaries are and that. However, that does not include unlikely bonuses, which are counted against the hard cap because it's a firm line, and that's not included in anything else. I just don't know what those numbers are.
Yeah, that $2.5 million does make things difficult in terms of maneuvering room. They do have some guys that I think they would be willing to move who could be salary, something along the lines of Jamal Crawford, who's really been struggling lately. But does anyone want to touch his $14 million for next year and then his $3 million guarantee for 2018-19 at age 38? I think he'll be at that point. I don't know who necessarily would be interested in that. Austin Rivers is playing better, and he's also the coach's son. You have to imagine they wouldn't necessarily want to move him. Wes Johnson could be some salary. He's making a mid-level exception around $6 million for the next year, and then he has a player option after that for $6.1 million. None of those guys, I think, are any of those guys a value contract that could entice a team to give up someone who's expiring?
Wes Johnson, maybe. He's at a reasonable contract for another year and then has that player option. Certainly a possibility there, but hard to see who really falls in love with him, and then that becomes the gateway. Like, he has to be the best piece in that trade because they don't have much else.
I think the Kings would have been an interesting potential trade partner for them, because the Kings actually have a fair number of stretch four combo forward types that I think could help the Clippers. Omri Caspi, for one, being out of the rotation. But now that Rudy Gay has gone down with that torn Achilles for the year, you have to imagine that Caspi will be playing for the Kings. We'll see if the Kings are going to still be pushing for the eighth seed or not. They're pretty much out of it as far as the projections are concerned, and maybe that reality will come to them as well. But they also will have full bird rights on Caspi, and his cap hold is pretty small, so they might want to re-sign him. We'll talk more about that in the Kings section. But that really is the only, because that's still, I think, where we think they need to upgrade is on the wing, and there aren't a ton of those guys available, but maybe there's a few sort of undervalued guys they could look at, but not many. We know that the wing market obviously is always, or maybe another direction that they could even think about would be, you know, Ben McLemore is not playing for the Kings either right now, and he's going to be a restricted free agent, is reported to want out of Sacramento. That's another way that the Clippers could look as well. And we're kind of moving to the Kings section here a little bit, which I wanted to save, but they have a lot of guys. I think that the Clippers, that could be a strategy, is to look at, or maybe there's reports that Tim Hardaway Jr. might be available from Atlanta for a couple of second rounders. Now, the Clippers have bad second rounders, so that the Hawks might not be interested in that. But those are the types of trade, maybe just a guy who is a restricted free agent, allow them to get younger, that they would have full bird rights on, and then could re-sign, and who would hopefully play better once he was a Clipper surrounded by all this talent.
It's a good idea. It's something I support. And also, like the Warriors, there'll be a player on the buyout market. Doc is a very popular coach, and depending on what their health situation is, they very well could have the possibility of playing time for somebody who wants to rehab their value.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see whether last year's failed Jeff Green trade, in which they gave up a first rounder to Memphis to get him and then were unable to re-sign him, or didn't want to pay enough to re-sign him, or whatever it was, makes Doc a little bit more skittish here. Or maybe he would just move their 2021 pick now too, because he feels like he's not going to be there in 2021, and you might as well just give it the best shot that you can with this group. The other thing that we have to remember too, though, in addition to the fact that they are hard capped at the apron, is if they are able to execute their plan, which presumably will be re-signing both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, they are going to be well into the tax, and that's before you even get to re-signing JJ Redick, who clearly is probably going to be a $15 million plus a year player. It seems like they might be a little loath to take on money for next year for that reason. I guess at that point they could always like try to stretch Jamal Crawford or something, but they're looking at quite a massive tax bill for next year, probably, you know, in the $40 million range if they were to re-sign all three of those free agents, Redick, Paul, and Griffin.
It's important to consider, but at the same point, if it's a move that can make them better in the short term and ideally in the long term, Ballmer would consider signing off on it, considering how narrow their window might be.
Yeah, and remember too that if with Paul and Griffin's cap hold and Redick's cap hold, they're basically $30 million over the cap. So even if they lost Paul or lost Griffin, they would still be capped out, have no way to replace those guys at all. Anything else you wanted to say on these guys?
No, let's move on to the Lakers.
So on this list, you put down, because you did the outline for this one, the first little bullet point is always motivations. That's interesting for the Lakers.
It's shockingly complicated because we don't know exactly what they want and how what has happened this year affects that. There's the Jim Buss storyline that's percolating over this whole season. It's looming over the whole season. And then the development of their young players. And that's why it ties in with assets, because if the Lakers were not sold on one or more of their young players, this would actually be a great time to sell because they still have intrigue around the league. All of them have looked good at moments, but if they're not at that point, it's very hard to make that decision, especially considering most of them are a long way from getting expensive.
This is a perfect example of moral hazard for Jim Buss. And it was telling that in an interview that he gave earlier this year, I think it was with Bill Oram, he said, you know, we don't know how we're looking, we're making progress. You know, he was proud of what they had done. And he did make a reference to, well, you know, if we're one of the three worst teams in the league at the end of this year, then, you know, I might see things differently. Well, they're currently projected to be the second worst team in the league at only 27 wins, with the Sixers on fire, the Heat winning a couple of games that you wouldn't have expected lately. And quite frankly, that's the best possible outcome for them because of what their situation is with those protected picks that they owe. It's two draft picks on the balance, not just one.
It's a crazy circumstance because it's because of how long this is delayed, because they put in this contingency because they had to in the Dwight Howard trade, that if the pick that they had previously owed in the Steve Nash trade had not conveyed, that it would extinguish because they had to do something with it. And they didn't and so what happens is, if there are two paths now, it's gotten a lot simpler. If they keep their pick this year, which is top three protected, very narrow protection, but they've held onto it for a couple of years now. If they retain their pick this year, they do not owe Orlando a first round pick at all. It transfers into, I believe, 2 seconds. If they lose their pick to the Sixers this year, because the Suns traded it to the Sixers, then they also trade their 2019 first round pick unprotected to the Magic.
Yeah. It's really just a massive, massive incentive for them to tank. And even if they finish as the second seed in the lottery, that's not guaranteed that they're going to be top three, but it sure as heck gives them a much better chance at it than if you're fourth or fifth or something like that. And the Sixers, it seems like they're going to try and keep winning with Ben Simmons coming back. You'd think they'll start doing better too. Embiid has been awesome, but it's really, it could cripple the franchise because they don't have enough talent right now on this team. And the other thing that's crazy to look at too is their cap situation for this offseason. I have their most likely scenario if Nick Young were to opt out, which actually I think he probably would at this point, as crazy as that is to say. Assuming that they keep that draft pick, they're looking at about $26 million in space. If they lose the pick, then maybe they're at $30 million. So probably just about the 7 to 9 year max is $31 million. Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov combine to make another $32 million in 2017-18. And then, of course, they're both under contract at about that rate for the next 2 years after that as well. And probably hard to say that in what should be the best year that those two guys are going to have, given their age, if you still got the second or third worst record in the league and you're paying those guys in their 30s a combined $32 million, this team could have again had almost $60 million in space this offseason if they had just been a little bit more judicious there, gone kind of the rental route. Or I mean, maybe it's unrealistic to expect they wouldn't have taken on any money, but at least they could have overpaid guys for 1 year or gotten guys for cheaper or less years or something. So it really, when you look at where they're probably going to end up this season, it shows why those signings made such little sense. And it's a good thing to remember too, because pretty much any time that these guys who are worried about their jobs try to do a win now move, number one, you're probably worried about your job because you're not, haven't been doing very well. So your idea of a win now move might not even work to win now. And then when you're kind of panicked like that, and you feel like you have to do something, you probably make a bad move. And so, I mean, how many of these like win now, save my job moves ever end up working?
Not many. And sometimes it could even be an ancillary part of the move that player ends up being better a couple of years after that GM gets fired. And look at how well that worked out. With the Lakers, also remember that the limited, you said about $26 million in space that they have, includes dips in all of these contracts. So that Jordan Clarkson, Luol Deng, Timofey Mozgov, out of the optimism for what the Lakers could do in 2017, those contracts are lower next season than they are this year or will be in subsequent seasons. So we don't know exactly where the cap is going to go, but that's something to consider as well.
Yeah, you'd think that maybe what they would want to do is try to get off of Deng or Mozgov's contract, but I don't know that they have anything on the roster outside of their core guys that could entice someone to take on those contracts for that long without also sending something back as well.
The other assets that that we have to talk about with them, I think the biggest one is Lou Williams. Lou Williams is on an excellent contract, yeah. $7 million this year, $7 million next year, and he overlaps a lot with Jordan Clarkson. You can keep both of them just because more bench guys can help, and it's not like they're, you know, it's not like they have so much depth that they're getting squeezed out, but they would need to look at the right price, and Lou Williams could actually be a nice asset to have if you don't get the right offer now, both at draft time and in July, because from what I can tell, it looks like this is going to be a weaker scorers market, and so those teams that have middling cap space could be sitting there saying, well, we can get him and then we can get somebody else, and that's a pretty good summer.
What would your price be for Lou Williams if you're the Lakers? Would like a crappy first round pick do it for you?
Probably. I would like it to be one that had a little bit maybe of upside. Like, I wouldn't say like the Warriors pick from the Jazz. I'm not saying the Jazz are interested in Lou Williams, but like where you know it's 30 or something like that. But the like that Clippers pick theoretically, but I believe the Raptors have that and I don't think they're looking to trade for Lou Williams at this moment. But something where that team is a little bit less certain, even if they're good right now, that would be good for me. Or, you know, 2 31 to 36 like second round picks, I'd be okay with that too.
Yeah, I mean, what teams could really use Lou Williams? Could Detroit maybe could use him? I think sure. Someone to just create shots on the second unit. Could Houston use him? Probably not. Their offense is already
their
so
guards
good
are
anyway.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a little insurance for Gordon, and you think that maybe they need another creator, but Gordon has done just fine in that role so far.
Oklahoma City could use him, but they don't have assets.
Yeah, they would have to go out to like 2022 to get another pick to trade.
Boston could use him just to have another creator, but they have plenty of guards. It would just be if they didn't, for whatever reason, they trusted him more than Terry Rozier.
Yeah, he could be useful as like a bench score type in Memphis, but Memphis has a couple of picks out in the future too. So,
oh God, if the Wizards gave up their first.
Yeah, I don't think he's really what the Wizards need either.
No.
Orlando maybe in like a panic move. Yeah, could definitely use his scoring, someone to just efficiently put the ball in the basket. The Kings, actually, I think that actually would not be a horrible target for the Kings. But again, they are bereft of assets as well going forward due to their trades. So yeah, it's tough to say. And I mean, while I certainly would be trying to trade him, they're probably thinking, hey, we want to be good again next year. He's a good value. He's scored well and efficiently for us. So maybe we'll keep him around. But I think at this point, you got to kind of just roll with Clarkson instead. Their problem is defense. Lou Williams does not help that at all. Send him to a team. The Sixers actually could probably use Lou as well, just someone who could score a little bit as well off the I mean, he won't be any worse defensively than Sergio Rodriguez is probably.
And if we're in that mold, then Orlando could always use him too, just because they need all the scoring they can get.
But yeah, I mean, my thinking would be, hey, we're not good now, we're not going to be good next year, we don't really have a path to being good next year, there's no free agent that we're going to get who's going to put us over the edge, we really have a long way to go here, unless some of our guys just take like a Milwaukee Bucks Giannis Jabari Parker style leap here. That's kind of unlikely. So yeah, just try to get another pick out of Williams. And yeah, it might seem like you're selling a little low on him, but he doesn't really help you to be the next great Lakers team. So sell for what you can, assuming you could get a decent first rounder for him. But I wouldn't anticipate them doing that in reality.
Just to get you in trouble with Lakers fans, are there any of their young guys that you would more seriously than others consider offers on?
Well, but what is that offer going to be? Is it going to be for a more established veteran, or is it going to be to like, you know, a Michael Carter Williams from Philly type of trade to like get even younger and get more assets?
That's true. I guess I was thinking about it more just who you identify as their core and who's more on the edge.
Oh, I mean, it's really tough to say. Like, they've all shown flashes. I mean, I think Ingram, with the way he's played the last couple of weeks, would be the guy that I would be least willing to part with. I would subtly listen to see what D'Angelo's value is. I am lower on him than I think a lot of people are, and he's just so bad defensively. Has been really inconsistent. Has had some flashy games. Has got some talent, but my worries about him becoming a star are well documented. So I would listen, but again, you're not going to trade him for someone who's an established star. Those type of players aren't really on the market and don't make sense for you where you are as a franchise. So it would be something along the lines of just getting even younger and pushing back the process again, and then to trade the guy you just drafted number two overall a year and a half in, that doesn't look good either for Jim Buss, who's trying to make the argument that he should be retained.
It's also a reminder, while none of their guys have looked bad this year, of how, and this is often said in baseball, about like the perils of clutching your young prospects in case it doesn't work out, because there were ideas that you'd hear from Lakers fans like, oh, we can't trade those guys for Russell Westbrook. It's like, well, no, look at what Russell Westbrook is. Look at what those guys are. And I would listen on Randall and Nance as well. I like both of them. I actually really like Nance, but the high profile they have and some nice moments could lead to another team overvaluing. So you always listen, but you don't make a deal unless it's a good one for you.
All right, we will get to the Phoenix Suns in a moment, but first, this from Blue Apron. I had some great meals in Toronto, but I definitely miss just cooking for myself, which my girlfriend and I have been doing quite a bit with Blue Apron. Blue Apron is a food delivery service that gives you the exact right amount of really high quality ingredients to make great home cooked meals. No food waste at all because they measure everything out perfectly. The instructions are very clear and concise, usually between 25 to 40, 45 minutes at the outset, and you've got a great home cooked meal. My girlfriend and I cook it together. We always make an effort to eat together on those nights, which sometimes can be difficult with our busy schedules. This week, we will be enjoying crispy cod sandwiches with red cabbage and apple slaw, and honey mustard chicken with roasted winter vegetables. You can either do 2 days a week, which is what she and I do. We actually get the four-person meal, and then we have great leftovers, so we actually end up getting four meals out of it during the week, 2 4-person meals. Or you can go 3 days a week if you'd like as well. If you want to get started with them, blueapron.com/capspace is the URL to let them know that you came from us. Also, let them give you your first 3 meals free via that blueapron.com/capspace URL. That URL easy to remember because we talk about capspace all the time in the program, including quite often on this program. And with that, let's get to the Phoenix Suns.
I obsess a lot about how the Nuggets are so interesting because they could be buyers and sellers. And I don't think about the Suns that way, but the possibility is there just because of their strange combination of assets.
Yeah, they have these old guys. Tyson Chandler has played better, but I still don't think that anybody wants to take on $13 million a year for this year and the next two afterwards. Jared Dudley has really been injured and totally out of the rotation for them. I thought that he actually was playing okay early in the year, but he's a $10 million a year guy who's not really a starter, has to play backup power forward, smart defender, but not going to be able to guard the best wing threats. He's a little slow of foot these days. Do you think that there would be, I mean, if he's not playing for Phoenix, I'm sure they could chalk that up in their discussions to, hey, you know, he doesn't fit our timeline. We're going with the youth movement, TJ Warren, getting Chris and Bender some time. PJ Tucker has been really good for us, blah, blah, blah. Is there a market for him at basically $10 million a year this year and the next two, ages 30 to 32?
Potentially for teams that don't have a lot of flexibility. Like, I thought about Cleveland. If Dan Gilbert wanted to spend that kind of money, he would help them, be another piece that they could have to be relevant. Incidentally, so with the Clippers, just as another guy, yeah, that they could have. And of course, he left there on not the greatest of circumstances, but he could be a
Washington
piece
would be another one that could totally use him too. Like, it seems like it's funny, everywhere that he leaves always like wants him back again.
Yeah, just like, and we had Lou Williams going to two of his old teams too, so it ties in. But Dudley, he makes sense a lot of those places. I think Toronto, if they had their druthers and could kind of make that team into what I would like it to be, he would be a nice backup four for them. Or like if they used him and Patterson, like they used Patterson a little bit more.
Yeah, he's pretty redundant with Damari Carroll already. I mean, spending $25 million a year on Carroll and Dudley combined, it doesn't like particularly fiscally responsible.
Fiscal responsibility is Toronto's focus though now.
I think, yeah, team, but your idea of teams that are kind of capped out, Charlotte would be another one maybe that could use him because their bench bigs have been so bad, you know, kind of slot him in as a four. And I think he would be good in Clifford's system just because he knows how to execute. That might be another option. And you're probably just giving him away for free if you're the Suns. And they actually have surprisingly little cap space when you consider the quality of the team and all the young guys that they have. Even if they were to move on from Leandro Barbosa, who's non-guaranteed, $4 million, only $500,000 that is guaranteed next year, they still would only have $18.6 million. That would include Alex Len's cap hold, the restricted free agent, $12 million, so they could get up to 30 potentially, and that also includes my projection of them having the number 4 overall pick, which would have a $5 million cap hold. Yeah, I mean, who else pops out to you? I guess the other one that we should talk about is Brandon Knight. He's making basically $14 million a year for this year and the next three after this one.
Knight has not exactly impressed this year. He looks to me to be more like a backup point guard. Fortunately for the Suns, backup point guard is still a valuable thing. And if the team believes in him to be more of a starter, you could see a little bit of a market for him. I feel like we also need to mention Eric Bledsoe, who has just had a great game against the Raptors tonight. He has another 2 seasons
on the Raptors.
Yeah, he has another 2 seasons after this year at 14 and a half per his rises. But that's that, you know, that's a great value for somebody as good as he is, and he's not providing much present value for the Suns, and it looks like they're far enough away that I think they should consider it. And then the other one that I got in a little bit of hot water with Suns fans today talking about it because he was playing well is PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker is an expiring contract. They should be able to get an asset for him in a trade. And I mentioned the possibility of a buyout, and all the Suns fans are like, well, why would we do a buyout? And the answer is they should trade him, but he could either be bought out because they can't, they work too hard and then he just leaves some money on the table, or because, and this is what I was getting at but couldn't tweet because the 140 characters, if he was a part of a bigger move, like let's say they traded Eric Bledsoe, maybe you would need his salary to fit in with that, and then that team would buy him out.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And the Suns now, this recent hot streak they've been on, which I'm looking forward to talking about on the 15 and 60, I want to dig into why they've been good, but they're projected now by 538 to finish in a three-way tie for sixth, and they're knocking on the door of teams like the Magic, the Pels, the Kings, Mavs. They're kind of all in that mix. If the Suns keep playing well, you know, they could really end up hurting their draft pick quite a bit, but that also could convince them that, hey, you know, if we just use this cap space to get one more vet, maybe we actually can get in the playoff mix. I know that's going to be important to Robert Sarver, considering 2010 now, 7-year playoff drought for this team. If it were me, I would definitely be trying to move Bledsoe. I mean, what would be enough for you for him? Two first rounders? It's probably like similar to the Dragic return, I would think. I think they're, and yeah, I mean, it would have to be something like that, with like two first rounders with like some upside, as you like to say.
Yeah, that would be about right. I wouldn't expect to get exactly what that has turned into, but that would be what I would be shooting for at the very minimum.
Yeah, I mean, because remember, we thought Miami was going to be good. Now it's looking right, like they're, you know, when they, and they have that top seven protected and then unprotected in 2021. So yeah, it would have to be something along those lines. And I think also maybe Bledsoe could make more sense to move in the offseason, because how many teams that are contendery would really want him to potentially be an upgrade for this year? Once the draft shakes out, if the Suns were to draft a point guard, then they could maybe look to move on from him. But if they trade him, they really are going to have no solution at point guard either. I think Knight is not necessarily it as well. Is there anywhere that you see as a potential suitor for Knight? And would anyone give up an asset for him? Or are we just talking about a straight dump at this point with him and feel lucky that you're able to do it?
A light asset, maybe something like a solid second round pick would be possible for a team that was desperate enough, but probably not. And
I mean, you got to send back salary, of course, as well. But
right. And the most likely scenario for me, at least with Brandon Knight, would actually be trading him once the dust kind of settles next year, because maybe then teams have a little bit more fleshed out, because there aren't that many teams with full on space, and fundamentally franchises are optimistic. But maybe if Chicago, like if they fill up their boat a little bit, then they had their salary, or just, you know, just any team like that. Orlando always needs shot creation from basically anybody they can do. That at that point, maybe you sit there and go, okay, well, we can't do better than Brandon Knight, so we'll trade him. But that's also why I don't expect him to get moved right now, because there aren't teams in that threshold that are really needing what he brings, and he's not good enough to push a team like the Wizards into that luxury tax bill down the line, because while his contract is relatively reasonable, even if he's disappointed this year, for the Hornets, for the Wizards, it's still not tenable, because they're going to probably be close to or over the luxury tax line moving forward, and he's not worth that.
What about a package to Philly, and maybe they would give up an asset as well to get Jahlil Okafor back from Philly, and maybe some other flotsam, and the Suns could throw in something there as well. I think Philly, he would be a good fit next to Ben Simmons, because he's not really quite dynamic enough as a passer to be the guy with the ball in his hands most of the time, but is a good shooter and a guy who can run the show on your bench and attack off the dribble if he's on the weak side. Hopefully could play a little bit better defensively, although he's not ever particularly done that in his career so far. Is that just completely crazy? Just to, like, give you another bite now, Phoenix, at having someone who could be a wonderful offensive center?
It's pretty close. The reason being that the Sixers have so many draft assets and possibilities that I wouldn't want to foreclose on those sorts of things at this point. If we're talking in mid-July and the best free agents have already decided and they've already used their draft picks and they got wings, they got shooters, whatever it is, they still have that same need, you can have that exact same conversation then.
Yeah, and maybe Knight's value could be rehabilitated too if down the end of the season, they're just like, all right, we're going to rest Bledsoe, who's got all these knee issues anyway, kind of put him in saran wrap and preserve him for next season or for the trade market in the offseason, and let Knight actually start and see what he can do once he gets healthy again, see if he can put up some big games and maybe rehab his value a little bit. That might be another thought for them too. Anything else you want to say on them?
I would listen on a lot of their young guys just because they haven't been so good that you would hang up the phone. Whether we're talking Alex Len, who's going to be a free agent this summer, TJ Warren, who I like quite a bit, but might not necessarily fit with their vision of a team. And the younger guys, the guys even younger than that, like Bender and Chris, probably not. But I wouldn't, you always listen in case somebody's going to make a mistake.
Yeah, Leandro Barbosa, there's any chance he could just go back to the Warriors? He's only making $4 million, so they wouldn't have to put together too much salary.
They probably want to ask for that in the form of a buyout. Maybe he would leave a little money on the table for the Suns and do it that way.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he does have $500,000 guaranteed for next year, but presumably the Warriors could swallow that.
Sure.
And I think he's been playing sporadically, like 17 minutes one game, 0 minutes the next game kind of thing over these last few weeks. So he and Dudley were signed to be good locker room influences. Maybe they want to keep them around for that reason. Barbosa hasn't looked terrible when he's been out on the floor, but maybe he's a buyout candidate. I don't think he's going to get you anything in trade, but that's probably why a buyout would be more realistic there, because he's just, nobody's going to want to give up anything for him.
Right. And I could certainly see the possibility that he could either, figure out something with that second year on his contract and then just maybe leave even $500,000 or $1 million on the table just to be able to choose his destination as opposed to a trade.
Okay, let's get to Sacramento. A quick rundown of what their situation looks like for next year to put this in context. They could have as much as $41 million in space. That, of course, would not include the cap hold of Rudy Gay, assuming he opts out, which I think he probably will, but we don't know that for sure. And if they were to waive and then stretch the small guarantees of Anthony Tolliver and Aaron Aflalo, those guys are making $20 million combined. So you keep them around, you're down to 20 or so. And Gay, his cap hold is $20 million also. So it depends what happens with the guys already on the roster, but that's what they could get to. Matt Barnes also has a player option for 6.4. I would imagine he almost certainly will not opt out of that. Omri Caspi also has a $5.6 million cap hold. I'm including that. If they wanted to dump him, they could even get up to $46 million in room. I think they should hold on to Caspi because they'll have full bird rights on him, and he has a very small cap hold. So, and he seems to like Sacramento. I think his family likes it there. So maybe he could come back. The first thing that came to mind for me, though, as far as a trade, is maybe there is a team that would actually want to, who is capped out, that would actually want to take on Rudy Gay just for now, knowing he can't play this year, just to get his bird rights, or to try and convince him to opt in a place he might actually want to stay next year, because they just wouldn't be able to add a player of his caliber. And we don't know what he's going to be when he returns, but maybe he could be better than whoever you could get with like your mid-level exception or something, if you're a Charlotte or a Washington or something like that. And then Sacramento could get back either, a second round pick or just someone who is under contract for a little longer who can play a little bit. That would just be a general structure. I haven't gotten too deeply into what exactly could work out there.
There is a note in our 15 and 60 plan from the stuff that I put in over the weekend that says Danny's crazy idea for the Sacramento Kings, and it was exactly what you just said. I'm terrified that we have become groupthink without even discussing things, because there are I've brought it up kind of in ancillary moments of this podcast, but there are numerous teams that want to get better, and a couple of them that can get better that with that larger gap now, because the cap is rising between the cap and the tax itself, that just don't have the flexibility. So why not take that gamble? And
what about like to Charlotte for like Jeremy Lamb and Spencer Hawes
or Sessions?
Well, they need Sessions, though.
They need Sessions. But yeah, there are ways that you could figure this out. Yeah, Spencer Hawes goes back to Sacramento. But yeah, there are a series of teams that are in that situation. And even New Orleans. Like, New Orleans might have cap space that they can use. They are running a weird situation with Jrue Holiday, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, not in this podcast, but in a future one. Rudy Gay is presumably better than who they're gonna have at that spot anyway, so they could take a risk there.
Like, maybe like him for Solomon Hill, although they actually really like what Solomon Hill has done defensively, but and they're finally actually able to play him at the four now. But
or just for Tyreek, that would be just to get out of just for Sacramento to get out of the risk and some sort of young guy who doesn't suck.
Wait, the risk. What risk?
The risk of Rudy Gay opting in if they don't want him.
Oh, the opting in. Right. Yeah. Well, I think they would be happy if he opted back in.
They could always trade him if for whatever reason. Because I think that there are teams that would value him if he opted in, unless there was something horribly wrong with his situation.
Yeah, and who knows? Like, there's a 50% chance that he's like not going to be a starting level player at all anymore when he comes back. This is a very devastating injury, and he's 31. So you're taking a risk on him. Yeah, it's but a team like Charlotte, you mentioned Washington again, also. Just one of these teams that feels like, hey, you know what? We're not going to be able to get anything next year anyway. Let's just take a chance on this guy. And they have another free agent too.
Oh, God. I just thought about him on the Pacers.
Yeah. Well, who are they trading for him? I don't think there's anyone that they could trade.
I don't know, but I feel like it could happen somehow. Oh, God, if they get Monte. No.
Yeah, they wanted Monte for a while, supposedly. But hopefully, now that he's not starting, hopefully the league realizes, like, how bad he's been for these last couple of years now. Darren Collison is another guy too who they're probably going to keep around till the end of the year. That he will have a pretty low cap hold. He will be age 29, a guy who's pretty dependent on athleticism. I don't know that I would really want to be a part of his next contract, but he is a $9 million cap hold, and not including him or Ben McLemore, who you have to imagine they might not even give a qualifying offer to at this point. So they have a lot of space, but most of their team, other than Cousins and the guys they signed recently and Kostas Koufos, are going to be free agents, and those are some of the guys who are like the good values on this team that are now going to get expensive. They also are going to bring in Bogdan Bogdanovic, you would imagine, who will no longer be subject to the rookie scale, so they'll need some cap room still to pay him. And is there anyone else you'd be trying to move if you were that? Oh yeah, go ahead. What are you gonna say?
I wanted to bring up Koufos because the possibility, or even maybe probability, of DeMarcus Cousins re-signing there really starts the clock on thinking about moving him. I think Koufos is a reasonable value at his contract. He has this season and next season at about $8.5 million, then a player option for 2018-19 worth $8.7 million. That's a reasonable number for a backup center. Might even be a good number as we move forward. It's way better than Myers Leonard's number right now, and I would say Koufos has been better than him most of the time this year. Why I say the Cousins part of it is because now you don't need him as a fallback in case Cousins leaves, because if he signs the designated veteran extension, then he's staying. He's around long term. You can go in a different way, and they've spent so many other resources on centers. You have to hope at least one of them is going to work out.
Yeah, that's true, but I'm not sure who exactly is going to be all about Kostas Koufos. Maybe you could see a team like the Mavs trading for him, this is kind of one of the things where, all right, is a second rounder enough for him? Like, what are you getting back? Bigs, there are more bigs around than any other position, so nobody's going to want to trade a wing, which is what you need, or a point guard for him. I think that there are not a lot of teams that, if you're not going to give up a first rounder, like, why are you going to trade him? I don't think you're going to get anything that's going to change your fortunes back.
Can we just trade all these guys to Charlotte since they don't have much cap flexibility, and just be like, oh, they need backup center.
I mean, Charlotte actually could use a backup center.
Absolutely.
Who is reasonable. Yeah, that actually wouldn't, like, he and Cody Zeller actually wouldn't be like a horrible backup center tag team. Even a team like, say, the Nuggets could use, returning there, could use someone if they move on from Yusuf Nurkic. They could use a backup center, because then they're just, yeah, go ahead. What are you saying?
Portland for Azili and maybe some middling pick.
What is that middling pick? Just like a second like round some or something? Second. What use is Azealia to Sacramento, though?
No, it's cap filler. Basically, the idea of getting an expiring contract. So the idea is you get out of his contract, and you know, so I think he's better than that. But at the same point, does he really provide? Like, we think that, I think both of us believe that the center market could even get weaker in terms of trades over this next 12 months if it reaches that point, and Kufos is definitely your backup. I don't know why you want to just keep him. I don't think you sell.
Here's the
now,
thing about Kufos, though. Are the Sacramento Kings going to do better than him with $8 million a year?
Can't think that way, Nate. I agree with you, but you can't think that way.
Like, I mean, so like he's been starting next to Cousins against certain teams. He plays like 20, 25 minutes a game. Can you fill that 25 minutes a game? I mean, all of these centers, yeah, they've invested a ton of resources in Cauley Stein and Papa G and Scal, if you want to call him a center, but none of those guys can play at all. So to just give up someone who can play is in your rotation for a second rounder when you're trying to be good, like I don't think that works.
That's fair.
Like, unless you can get back a wing or like a backup point guard who can play, and I don't think teams are going to want to do that kind of a trade. I mean, I think they probably just hold on to Kufos.
Yeah, that's the most likely outcome for sure. I'm just trying to have fun with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just talking this through. Like, I don't mean right to be critical, but it's
no,
just,
I know, I understand.
Like, if we really think about it, you know, if you're a really good team, I mean, think of some of the guys, and perhaps the market's going to really normalize this offseason, or maybe it'll take till 2018 to do that. But still, he's basically making the mid-level exception money. I think if you have a guy in your top seven, which he certainly is on this team, who's making that money, he's pretty fairly paid. They need someone to be a backup center, and the fact that he and Cousins have been able to play together, like, to some degree, get a few minutes there. Yeah, I mean, I would hold on. That's probably more than anyone's ever talked about trading Costa Kufos. Do we have anything else on these guys we wanted to talk about before we get to a little bit of Minnesota Endeavor?
It's too early to trade any of their guys on rookie scale contracts, right?
Well,
besides Ben McLemore.
I mean, those guys have no value. But like, is there anyone who would give up a first rounder for Cauley Stein, Malachi Richardson, Scal, or Papa G? I don't think there's no way you're getting a first rounder for any of those guys.
I don't think that. Wow. That's such a huge indictment of their drafting.
You could indict their drafting like six ways from Sunday. It has been really bad.
But Papa Giannis was drafted with a lottery pick this year, and I'm not sure I would give up, like, I'm not doing this as Utah, but I'd give up the Warriors pick for him. Like, what we know is the 30th pick. I don't think I would give it up for him.
Yeah, and this is supposed to be a better, deeper draft than the last one, and there are plenty of teams that, you know, had Papa G out of the first round.
Of those guys, who would you ascribe the highest value to?
Oh, man. I haven't watched enough of Scal or Papa G in the D-League, but we certainly haven't heard any reports of them killing it. We'll put it that way. I guess Scal, just because like he can shoot and he can block shots. I mean, his basketball IQ by all accounts is pretty lacking, but at least he was, you know, at one point very highly recruited, talked about being a great player. Maybe he could be like a really good backup center. Like he could kind of be like a Dwight Powell type who could actually like block some shots and make some shots more than Dwight Powell does. Like maybe he could be someone like that.
I agree with you. I'm also a big Scal guy, so.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens when they really rev up the tank though here, because they're out of the playoffs now and they got to keep that top 10 protected pick. The number of planned rest games for
Cousins, they have to stay in the top 10, but if the Sixers start moving past them like a freight train, the incentives change a little bit, which I'm not saying they're going to do, but they could.
Yeah, right, because they have that pick swap. Yeah, I mean, the Sixers are not that far behind the Kings. Like, they're only projected to finish like four games behind them. We'll see what happens. I don't expect the Sixers to keep up this pace, but I would have said the same thing five games ago too.
They're tied in the loss column right now. It's 15-27 and 16-27.
That's pretty incredible. And the Kings are on this 8-game trip right now, and the Kings still, you know, I guess after this 8-game trip, they probably won't be too worried about losing the top 10 protected pick to the Bulls anymore. All right, you want to talk a little Minnesota and Denver here? I thought this was an awesome game that I really, really enjoyed.
It was so much fun. As much as I love defense, it is also very fun to see a game where there is basically no defense.
Well, there was defense actually in the fourth quarter and sure, down the stretch. And Chris Dunn actually played some awesome defense in this game. One of his best games. I think he had like 10 points and nice. He actually scored like 8 of the first 10 for Minnesota. He hit 2 threes when Denver was doubling on Towns, and he cut right into the lane and hit a floater off of a Towns pass, and then didn't do much the rest of the game. But he had his help defense just was outstanding. On a couple of back cuts, he just came off of his man. He had a ridiculous block. I forget who he got on that one. It might have been Jameer Nelson. Jameer Nelson looked very short in this game. Yeah, and then Jarrell Arthur had an unbelievable stretch guarding Karl Towns at the end of the third, and then when Towns came back in the fourth, he just stopped him like four plays in a row, forced a couple of travels, blocked his jumper, blocked another shot around the basket. It was really incredible what Arthur was able to do. I think he actually had sat out a bunch of games with just knee soreness, which has been a perpetual problem for him since he had that surgery in the offseason. But yeah, he was fantastic, and it was really interesting because Jamal Murray also played extremely well in both halves. He had 17 points in 20 minutes. And in both halves, Malone went back to Jameer Nelson who had started at point guard. And then in both halves, they really got killed at the end of them. And that's a big part of why they ended up losing, not being able to score down the end of those halves.
Denver still needs to figure out a fair amount of what they want to do, but Jokic is such a wonderful piece to figure all of that out with. He's a great passer, a very intuitive player. I'm a big fan of his. He's not perfect, but I love what he can be offensively and defensively. I certainly think he can work his way to being respectable and probably better than that. So you can work with that, and then Towns is just a monster.
Yeah, and for all of Jokic's brilliance, he had no chance of stopping Karl Towns at all. Every time they didn't double team, he either got a foul or he scored on Jokic. And I thought it was interesting too, both of these coaches started big. Kenneth Faried has been playing well as the starting power forward. He actually started guarding Towns, and then they just doubled Towns. I mean, Denver just had nobody who could guard him until they went to Arthur, and Arthur played this great game. I was surprised that Towns wasn't able to overpower Arthur, but he was fantastic. So Faried only played 14 minutes at the start of each half. 7 minutes total at the start of each half, or 14. And then Gorgui Dieng, same thing, only played at the start of each half. And those guys combined for 4 points. Faried didn't even attempt a field goal. And I thought it was encouraging to see Tibbs go small, and like really small too, not even necessarily with Bielitsa, who had some moments in this game, offensively at least. But Shabazz Muhammad played a lot of four. And guess what? Shabazz Muhammad, as a small ball four, is pretty damn effective.
He showed a lot more energy tonight, even though he did play 33 minutes. He was active, had a big steal late. I think it was in the fourth quarter. Steal and bucket. And I like Muhammad. It's funny to see him do well as a small ball four, because my thought was to always play him down a couple positions so we could post guys up, kind of like when the Celtics play Marcus Smart at the one versus playing him at the two or the three. But he can work in that capacity. Guy gets buckets, and they've been their play at power forward in particular Minnesota's has been so disappointing. He only played 5 minutes, but I got so mad at Cole Aldrich, because basically his whole job on defense is being a help defender, and there were a couple times where the guards gave up penetration, which yes, they probably shouldn't have done, and he just stood there. Like, your whole job is just to be in the way, and you couldn't be in the way.
Yeah, he was really flummoxed mentally, I think, by having to guard shooters. He was matched up with Arthur during that time. He likes to stretch out to the three-point line. He was guarding Murray on a switch on one of those plays too, and just really, he was just sort of standing there 8 feet from the basket, sucked out by his man, but not actually really guarding him, and not helping either. It was really kind of the worst of both worlds. So he did not play very well, only managed 6 minutes. Tyus Jones also had a pretty nice game in this one in his 19 minutes. Dunn actually ended up playing 34 minutes though, and had his 10 points, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds, 3 steals as well for Dunn, although still, only 3 of 8, and just not enough aggressiveness with the ball in his hands. Like, Dunn is supposed to be this athletic force, and this is a Nuggets team that doesn't have a ton of rim protection, and especially Dunn would get the ball in transition and just kind of like pull it out, like not even be aggressive with it. Another huge issue for Denver in this one was getting back on defense off of their own turnovers, and they gave up a lot of pick sixes too, where it wouldn't have mattered, but they gave up 31 points on 18 turnovers. I mean, that was really the difference in the game. The Wolves got so many just run out type of buckets where they just, had 2-on-1s or just got dunks off of Denver turnovers.
It makes sense that Denver's going to struggle in that, because they don't, like, that's not really the archetype. That's one of the things they still need to figure out, but Wilson Chandler can do that at points. But he also was in different places offensively for them. And it just added more fuel to my fire of wanting to see eventually a larger wholesale makeover of a lot of their interior talent. I love Jokic. I love Jamal Murray. And I find some of their young guys who didn't play in this game intriguing. But Gallo and Chandler help make them better right now. But I don't see them being a part of the next great Nuggets team.
I thought this game was really notable for just how many guys just could not guard their guy one-on-one, and how often it was just these offensive possessions were just about that. Like, Bielitsa, who actually had like a couple of nice post-ups off of switches for fouls, just could not guard Wilson Chandler one-on-one. Like Wilson Chandler, I think like 5 of his 6 buckets, and he had 17 points, were right at the expense of Bielitsa, who fouled him a couple of times too. Jameer Nelson, down the end of the game, they just got switches on him and just shot right over him, or just went right over him to the basket. Aldridge, you mentioned what his problems were. Jokic had no chance against Towns. Fareed had no chance against Towns. It was really pretty remarkable. And Towns, I mean, we should mention his stat line too. 7 assists, 4 blocks, 32 points on 13 of 19 from the field, although he did have 6 turnovers in this one, many of those caused by Arthur. But he was really the big reason they won. And he hit probably the biggest shot of the game, which was a corner 2 after Chris Dunn set a really nice screen on Darrell Arthur to set it up. That was a huge shot. I mentioned Mike Malone channeling Keith Smart, and that was with Jameer Nelson is a much better player than AC Law the fourth is, but it kind of brought to mind Jamal Murray scoring 17 points in 20 minutes and just having some really just fantastic shots, and just the offense was running so well with him in there too. Just the way he moves the ball, the gravity he has shooting, how good he is as a cutter moving off of Jokic. And then Malone took him out when they were up 5, and the Nuggets scored 3 points over the last 4.5 minutes of the game.
Moutier being out opened up at least the possibility of seeing Jamal Murray not only start, but Jamal Murray playing with Nikola Jokic more, which he played
point guard too when he came in, and that was right. He was fantastic with the ball in his hands. It was great to see.
He was, and he has that crazy nice runner from about the free throw line, which you don't expect to see in a guy as young as he is, because he is a young rookie too. And the touch on his shots is nice. He is a creative,
he's a wonderful
passer,
ball handler.
Yeah.
Wonderful ball handle. I mean, and some of just the passing angles that he'll find in the pick and roll. I mean, he just plays with like a lot of just casual flair that is both effective. I think seeing him get to run some more pick and rolls, actually play point guard, he said on the broadcast that he was really excited to get out there and play point guard. I think he just looked more comfortable doing what he was doing, knowing that he wasn't about to get subbed out, playing a little bit more freely. I mean, this was against bad Wolves bench units, so I don't want to go too far with this. He hasn't played that many good games lately, but this is the role that I wanted to see him in, and I think that they just have to get more of a look at him like this. And Jameer Nelson has been a great vet for a long time, but let's move it along here.
Evaluation is the name of the game for them as well, because they need to figure out not only how good Jamal Murray is, but what he is, because they're going to have assets moving forward, cap space, draft picks, and knowing what you have in Murray, what you have in Moutier is essential for that, especially with Jokic becoming a little bit more clarified.
Yeah, Yusuf Nurkic did not play at all in this one after he's had a couple of decent runs lately, but he generally has not been playing that much. They've been going with Fareed, Darrell Arthur. This was a small ball game basically for most of it here. Gary Harris had a really nice game with 22 points on 14 shooting possessions. He got a lot of buckets off of those backdoors. I mean, what Murray, I mean, part of the problem with Nelson too is that he like can't get his shot off inside on these back doors, so like that takes away that whole threat when he's playing with Jokic. And then the last 2 possessions of the game were really just had me like banging my head against the desk, because it involved Nelson running a pick and roll, going around in circles, and then finally firing off a fadeaway jumper from the foul line over Towns that was woefully short. And then they still didn't put Jamal Murray in for the offense only possession with 1.3 seconds remaining. The play appeared to be for Nelson to catch the ball going to the corner, and he was too short to get a shot off over Tyus Jones, of all people, who's not exactly like a, you know, might have had like the lowest standing reach at the combine his year. And just imagining, like, why couldn't that just have been Jamal Murray catching that shot at 6'5"? He might have actually been able to get it off or shoot a fadeaway or something. Like, it was really pretty maddening down the end, even though the Wolves missed a bunch of free throws to kind of let them back in. And I thought that the Nuggets just could have done a lot better. They also late had an ATO where it was just an ISO for Gallo against Wiggins. They actually got a good shot out of that when Jokic got a pass in the lane and for once missed a shot. I mean, he's shooting just these incredible percentages on like kind of floater type of shots around the rim, but he missed that one late. Maybe was a little intimidated by Towns, but Denver really controlled the game throughout much of it and just was not able to score late, and that's why they lost.
I'll echo all your frustrations with the end of that game, but one shocking part of this game that I didn't even really think about that much during it, Will Barton played 25 minutes and 40 seconds and took two shots. I didn't even know that was possible.
It was a really weird game for him because both of the shots that he took were actually like pretty ugly shots over Towns. One of them was he went way too early at the end of the first quarter, shot with 5 seconds left with the shot clock off, and then Shabazz came down and hit like a running like 22-footer that actually ended up being a huge shot in the game. And he just was really out of it defensively. Like Shabazz was like back cutting and didn't look good. And then after halftime, he seemed to be making like a huge effort to pass the ball, ended up with 6 assists, 2 turnovers, even had one play where he came right down the lane on the break and gave it up when he kind of eschewed a layup instead. So it was definitely an odd way for him to play. He had a chance to play a lot of minutes. Didn't seem like he really was helping that much out there. Didn't get a 3-pointer off. It was interesting to see the contrast between him and Murray and Harris, both of whom were able to get a ton of shots off. And it's not like Barton like wasn't playing with any of their other playmakers either. So just kind of an odd game for him. And he is definitely like a very inconsistent player, a guy who still is under contract for $3 million for next year as well. And just not really sure what to make of him at this point. But I do think that he is someone who I would certainly be marginalizing him more, and I would be putting more of the minutes in the hands of Murray, Gary Harris, and then Moutier when he comes back, and really, you know, kind of moving along from Nelson or from Barton. But I think Malone kind of trusts those vets a little bit more, and they're still right in the playoff race, the Nuggets are.
I'd also like to see Malik Beasley get some time eventually, but that doesn't have to be now.
Yeah, never going to happen this year. But yeah, the Nuggets still projected to finish in a dead heat with the Blazers at 37-45 for that last playoff spot. Anything else you want to talk about in here, or should we get out of here?
I'll mention that I think it was on Friday I put out a podcast with Sirit Sohi for Real Jam Radio. It was fun. We went through some of the stars. She just wrote a piece on Klay Thompson. Then we went through the situations with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden and how they reflect their personalities and everything like that. Then on a wide-ranging thing, as I often do with Real Jam Radio, it was a lot of fun. You can check that out. And then, of course, standard Warriors content, Locked On Warriors, and writing pieces for The Athletic.
Don't forget about our sponsors today, Policy Genius, policygenius.com, and Blue Apron. Get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/capspace. Let them know that you came from us. Follow me on Twitter at @NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. And thanks to everyone who gives us iTunes reviews and ratings. That helps get the word out about the show. And if you're interested in potentially sponsoring the show, learn more about our numbers and demographics, send me an email. It's right there in my Twitter bio. NateBDuncan@gmail.com. And with that, we shall end our solicitations and bid you good night. Till next time.